thanks very much for joining me. I'm Bob Franklin. The program is Like It Is. On this edition, we profile Dr. Karen Drake, one of two physicians who delivered the McCoy septuplets in Des Moines, Iowa.
I grew up in Chicago. I grew up in a community south side of Chicago. I'm sure you guys don't know very much about that area, but it's a very depressed socioeconomic area. I grew up in what is called the ghetto, okay? I grew up in a place where I only had my mom, and that was it. But I also had grandparents who raised me. So there were quite a few adults in the house. I had an aunt and an uncle. And I had cousins, two cousins, and my brother and sister. So there's about seven people who were living in this house. My grandfather was an educator. My mother worked two or three jobs. My aunt was also an educator. So there was a lot of education in my background. A lot of adults who stressed education in my background. I grew up in a where it was not an easy situation for my mom. That's why it required her to have several jobs. I went to public school for just a short period of time till public school was no longer functioning for my education because my mother felt that we weren't doing as well in the public schools in Chicago, so she pulled us out of those public schools and sent us to Catholic school. My mother worked three jobs to send me to Catholic school. It wasn't easy. I saw how hard my mother worked. I saw how tired she was coming home. But she said she was doing this for her kids because she knew that was the way to get out.
Part one of our two-part program focuses on Drake's first public comment since the historic delivery.
Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Before I get started, I just want to thank KASU for inviting me to tell my part of this story. I got to thinking about coming here to talk about the historical delivery, and you know, this is the first time I've had the opportunity to tell my story from my point of view. It's almost been 4 years since that delivery occurred, and it's just so hard for me to believe because it stays fresh in my mind because it's such a unique situation and a unique opportunity for me. I'd also like to thank Mr. Robert Franklin for inviting me as well. Now, you probably want to know what a perinatologist is, and I've gotten all kinds of funny stories from young kids who think that I'm a perinatologist where I study dinosaurs and they can't get it straight with these young kids. But a perinatologist is a specialist in high risk obstetrics. And what we do is we're a referral practice mainly. It's where most patients will come to us simply from referral from other doctors. And we actually take care of mother and baby who have high risk concerns. And what are some of the high risk concerns may be high blood pressure, diabetes, moms who have heart disease. We've taken care of liver transplant patients, patients who've had cardiac transplants, kidney transplants. It's not just women who have more than one baby. Actually, there are quite a few obstetrician gynecologists who take care of twins and triplets. Very few obstetrician gynecologists want to take care of more than triplet gestations because they can be pretty significant and pretty problematic to take care of and manage and deliver. The actual beginning of how this all started was a phone call that I received, and I took this phone call from the patient's reproductive doctor. This doctor was one who helped the patient get pregnant, and she decided she would send the patient to our practice for care. This doctor called me on the phone, and she asked me, was I sitting down? And I said, no, why should I be sitting down? And so she said, well, I got something to tell you, and I'm not sure you're going to like what I'm going to tell you. And I said, okay, I'm sitting down, tell me. So she said, well, I have a patient here who has 7 fetuses. And I'm like, what? She said, I have a patient here who has 7 fetuses. And I said, 7 fetuses? Are you sure? And I just was like in shock. And she said, well, yes, she has 7 fetuses, and she wants to continue to keep those babies. And I said, oh, the first thing I said, oh, she's not going to make it. There's no way. She's not going to make it. So she said, I'd like to send her to your practice for care. And I said, okay, okay. And when I got off the phone, I just said, this is not going to work. It's never been done before. And so I talked to my partner, Dr. Mahone, about it. She thought I was joking. And the staff thought I was joking. I said, no, I'm not joking. This is serious. So the patient has set up an appointment to come to our office for consultation first. And just to give you a background perspective about how the septuplets or multiple gestations work, Mahone and I tried to do our homework before the patient came. And we were really disappointed because there isn't a whole lot of research out there. And the papers that we pulled were all no survivors, no survivors, no survivors. The last septuplet delivery was in 1985, and all of those babies had pretty much, there was a stillborn, and there was 3 neonatal deaths, and the rest of the babies had pretty profound problems. And right before we had actually delivered Bobby, there was a lady in Saudi Arabia who delivered septuplets, but they thought it was quintuplets, 5 babies. And it turned out to be 7. And she, too, had complications and problems because the babies were born pretty early at 26 weeks. There was absolutely no data to support that this was going to happen for this patient. So we presented this information to the patient to tell her that there was not going to be a good outcome. But of course, she wasn't hearing that. But before I, you know, get into meeting with her, I just want to also tell you, multiple births are just exploding. I'm sure you guys have seen in the media and read in TV, or seen on TV or reading in magazines that multiple births have just exploded. And why is that? Well, it's the advent of these infertility drugs that have created this surge of multiple births. And yes, the patient was on infertility drugs and injectable drugs. And what these injectable infertility drugs like Perganol or Medridin does is that it creates an environment during the woman's cycle where she releases all of these eggs. And it increases the likelihood that the more eggs you release, the more likely the sperm would cause conception of all these eggs. And in this case, this is how it worked for our patient. The risks of the chances of triplets now are almost 200% of what they used to be less than 10 years ago because of the advent of these infertility drugs. It is nothing for us to take care of triplets, and doing quite well with triplets these days. It's like, oh, okay, old hat. Whereas when I was training, triplets were just unheard of 10, 12 years ago. Just to give you an idea, we've taken care of 5 sets of triplets within the last 6 months, and that's just unusual, whereas when I was going through my training, we may see 1 or 2 in a year's time. So it's just exploded quite phenomenally. Unfortunately, with the risk of multiple gestation comes a lot of heartaches, particularly when you are talking about the risk to the mother and the fetus. The risk to the mother may be prolonged bed rest, high blood pressure, diabetes, prolonged hospitalization. Sometimes this patient may have risk for feeling pretty poorly or not doing well, bleeding, losing her uterus after a delivery because of the effects of having too much blood loss from the evacuation of the uterus. And for the neonate, the biggest problem is early delivery. The earlier you deliver these babies, the more likely you are to have profound problems, both physically and mentally, for the neonate. Well, after we spoke with Bobby about these concerns, we also spoke to her about selective reduction. And that can be pretty traumatic for a woman who, like Bobby herself, is a very Christian woman. And she has moral standards where, for her, selective reduction was not an option. And what selective reduction is reducing the number of fetuses to increase a better outcome. And I think in the advent of where we are in this environment, for women to not be spoken to about selective reduction would be a medical disservice for the patient. She should be spoken to as an option, even if she chooses not to do that option. And of course, for Bobby, that was not an option. And despite all the things we told this woman, she said she's going to go forward, she was going to go on, she was not going to stop or reduce her pregnancy, or she was going to do all the things that we asked her to do. The first thing is that this patient was put on bed rest at 8 weeks. Most of us at 8 weeks, when you're pregnant, you're not going to be at bed rest. You're going to be performing your normal activities, doing your duties. But at 8 weeks, this woman had a uterus that was 22 weeks size, which is right above her belly button. So you can imagine where it's going to be at 31 weeks at delivery. And we'll talk about that later. We kind of mapped out how we were going to do this because there was nothing in the medical literature that says to us, this is how it's done and this is how it works for the patient. She was put on bed rest. Nutritionally, she had a nutritional consultation where we were trying to figure out, okay, how many kilocalories does it take per day to get these babies to grow? Well, we figured out 4,000. How can somebody eat 4,000 calories in a day unless you are a physical trainer, you know, climbing Mount Everest or something of that sort, and you're at bed rest? So part of her nutritional supplementation actually came from liquid supplementation, like Boost or Ensure and the vitamins and minerals that she had. So the liquid actually helped boost up her caloric intake, not just food substances. We also try to figure out how often were we going to see this woman to make sure that she doesn't have any complications or concerns. So she was seen once a week in the beginning, just to see how she was doing and how she was feeling. Ultrasounds, which is sort of the bread and butter of perinatal medicine. We do a tremendous amount of ultrasounds in our office. How are we going to scan this woman and know that her babies are okay? And how are we going to know which is which when the time came? Just to give you an idea, she got scanned once a week, but towards the end of her pregnancy, the ultrasounds were done maybe twice a week to chop up the amount of time we needed to do the scans. It's hard as the babies grow to do measurements on each baby, 7 babies, and she's laying on her back for hours and hours and hours. So we chopped it up so that it helped her not be on her back for a long period of time and also to help scan the babies appropriately. We have a wonderful sonographer, probably the best that I've ever seen, and we were kind of blessed with having this woman who could keep tabs on how she was scanning the babies so that she knew which was which. And then part of the process of doing multiple birth scanning is you need to sort of say which, from the biggest baby to the smallest baby, how they are growing in proportion to everyone else in that group. Surprisingly, these babies were growing like they should for the gestational age, and they continued to grow like that for the gestational age, which was phenomenal to me. Also, we talked about not only with Bobby how she was going to be seen and evaluated, but how are we going to deliver her? Where were we going to deliver her? How are we going to expedite this particular delivery, in what fashion, in what form, so we can make sure everything is okay for both the mother and her fetus? So we began to do what is called multidisciplinary meetings with anesthesiology, the neonatologist, respiratory therapy, surgery, so that we can begin to sort of formulate how we were going to operate and manage this pregnancy when we take this woman to the operating room. It became sort of this daunting task for us that it just didn't seem like it was going to work well because no one has ever done it before. We even offered Bobby, and I don't tell many people this, but I think this is the first time I've actually told an audience that we even asked Bobby. Bobby, you know, we don't have the experience here. We don't know how it's going to work for you here. Would you be willing to go to the University of Iowa, which is 2.5 hours away, which they have more neonatologists, and they have more perinatologists than we, because there's only 2 in our practice, they have 5. Or would you be willing to go away to someone who's delivered at least quintuplets and has their team knows how it operates? And she looked at us, and she looked at us like we were crazy, like, why would I want to do that? You know, my family's here, my support system is here, this is where I want to be. And she said, I trust that you guys can do for me like anyone else. And since no one else has ever delivered septuplets, why can't you guys give the opportunity of doing it? Because you are my doctors, I'm your patient. And so it was like, it was like this light bulb went off, and it was tears came to my eyes because I really realized that this patient really trusts us, not only with the life of her babies, but with her own life, and we were going to try to make it work for her. So going back and meeting with all of these teams of doctors to make it work, realizing that this woman was not going anywhere. Part of the process of her success was the support of her family, the support of her church, the support of her community. And we felt that if she was taken out of that, all else would fail. Because this is not, the medical part of it is just unknown. She believed that part of why she was so successful is because of the support she had behind her. So we had to go back to the drawing board and begin to formulate how we were going to deliver this woman. When we finally finally had decided that Bobby needed to come in the hospital, she was about 28 weeks along, and she started to contract. And at 28 weeks, we were getting nervous that that's not good enough for this patient. 28-week babies in our neonatal intensive care, 100% of them will survive. All of them have survived, but not without physical or mental manifestations. Some of these children could have infection, respiratory problems, cerebral palsy, gut abnormalities, gut just shuts down, sometimes head bleeds where they become profoundly mentally deficient. So all of these things were sort of swarming around in our minds. At 28 weeks, we had to get her a little bit further than that. We put her on medicines to keep her from contracting, which helped us for a little while. At about 31 plus weeks, I remember going in her room, and she said, enough is enough, Dr. Drake. I can't take this anymore. And when she cried, I knew it was time. And so the family, we all got together and decided that everyone was in agreement that we would deliver this patient at 31 weeks and 5 days. She was about 2 days short of 32 weeks. And I was glad that she was done, because during all of this hospitalization, she became known to the community that this woman was pregnant with 7 babies. So we had all these trucks out waiting for her to deliver, waiting. And they were out where I could see out my window. And I used to close my blinds all the time, not wanting to see those trucks, not wanting to be involved in the media at all. You know, no way did I want to speak to the media. I didn't want to begin to speak about what ifs, because I didn't even know what ifs. I'll tell you a little short story. I was in bed one night, and I was feeling, of course, as a perinatologist and delivering, I was really tired, and I remember drifting off to sleep and thinking about Bobby. How are we going to do this? And I must have fell asleep because I stood up, or rather sat up straight in my bed, and I looked at the clock. It's about 2:12 or 2:15, and I said, oh my God, this woman is going to do this. She is going to deliver these babies. And I think I needed my peace about it because it's very difficult knowing that this woman could have some problems, or if she loses her babies or if she dies, that weighed on my mind quite heavily. Something that I hadn't spoken about to a lot of people because as a doctor, you're supposed to be the one to just uphold and feel good and say, yes, we can do this. And but there was a lot of fear about her delivery, at least from my aspect. And so when the time came to take her down to the surgical room to deliver her, I had to go see her to see if everything was all in order. And she comes bouncing out the bathroom, having taken a shower, bounces on the bed. Here she is, this big. And I said, Bobby, are you ready? And she said, I'm as ready can be. And I put my hands on her belly and I said, do you realize that this is going to change your life forever as of today? And she looked me straight in my eye and she said, it's going to change yours too, Dr. Drake. And little did I know what she was talking about until the time came for this delivery. I remember she being on the table and scrubbing and getting all ready and all the buzzing and all the surgical people lined up along this huge window looking in, trying to see what's going on. And she was delivered in a place where the babies were right next door and everything was set up for the neonatologist aspect for the babies to receive the babies. And while we were trying to get everything counted and all this stuff together, the anesthesiologist had already administered her anesthesia and put her on the table. The noise was so incredible in the room that I just got really nervous and said, okay, everybody, be quiet, quiet, quiet. We're getting ready to start. And it just got quiet, like silent. And then I said, oh, not that quiet. And so people laughed, and then they started to bring the level of conversation back up, but it wasn't as loud. And Dr. Mahone was standing on in front of me, and I was standing on the opposite side, and she began to do the procedure. And when we got to the uterus, we began to see one sac. And then the delivery happened. She delivered, and I clamped the cords of each baby and cut them and handed it off to teams. So she asked me at one point, did I want to deliver one of them? And I said, I'm not a left-handed person, so I can't deliver them. Keep going. So she kept going, and it was just incredible. I just wish people could see what my eyes have saw that day. I'll never, ever, ever forget it. I never forget any delivery, actually, of any of my patients, because I think it's a wonderful situation to be in. But that last baby, excuse me, was the baby that was just incredible. It was furled up in a fetal position, and then all of a sudden, he just stretched out his hands and his legs and let out this tremendous cry, and the roar in the room was just incredible. It brought tears to everyone's eyes, and I'm like, I gotta keep my eyes, you know, unwatered, because I still gotta take care of the patient. And we started to deliver the placentas, and this is where I got a little nervous because of the amount of blood loss that the patient could suffer delivering that amount of placentas after a cesarean section. And so the anesthesiologist kept telling us she's doing well, she's doing well. So as we were delivering the placentas and evacuating the uterus went from this size to that size. And I asked the anesthesiologist, I said, Dr. Brom, look. And he said, what? I said, look at this uterus. And he said, it looks fine. And I said, yes, this is the power of a woman right here as we stand today, delivering babies, whether it's one or seven, this is the power right here. And so he laughed and he said, yeah, you're right, because I'm glad that uterus shrunk and there's no bleeding. So everything went okay, and pretty much I left the arena at that point because I had to go see patients. And we started to, I went back up to the floor, and everybody was just, it was phenomenal how people were just congratulating and feeling happy and feeling great about the patient. But I had to go see patients. And so after seeing patients that day, it was pretty significant to stand in a room and finally be introduced as the doctors of the woman who delivered the septuplets. When I walked in this room, it was a room pretty similar to the one that we're in right now, but except there were seats to the edges, and they were full of camera people and news people. And when Dr. Mahone and I stepped out, I don't think they were expecting to see who they saw. They just oohed and awed, and I'm like, ooh. And we both looked at each other because I think they were not expecting two black females to come out and expect to have delivered those children. And I heard the murmur in the crowd, and, oh, they're black. Oh, they're female. You know, it was incredible. And I was like, this is great. This is good that, you know, people can do all things. And we, of course, after everything was over, Dr. Mahone and I both sat in our office, and tears came to our eyes because I think it was tears not of joy, but of it's over.
Some remarks from Dr. Karen Drake, who helped deliver the septuplets in Iowa. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.